This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Ute Mountain tribal members are lending their voices to the story of a conflict in Utah more than 100 years ago. They're giving new perspective on what's been called the Posey War, or the Last Indian Uprising. It was a relatively small skirmish in 1923 that led to the imprisonment of Ute bands and resulted in an end to the traditional Ute and Paiute connection to the land. It also ushered in a time of forced boarding school for Native children. We'll talk about the history behind a new commemoration project after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Members of the Native community in Lawrence, Kansas and Kansas City, Missouri are supporting Haskell Indian Nation's university students and the family and friends of missing Haskell student Cole Brings Plenty. Brings Plenty, who's also an actor, is known for his role in the TV show 1923, was last seen in Lawrence on Sunday. This week, members of the Native community have held gatherings at Haskell, which is located in Lawrence, to hold space and offer prayers as police search for Brings Plenty and are seeking his arrest in connection to an alleged domestic violence incident at an apartment in Lawrence on Sunday. The Kansas City Indian Center is offering its support as staff attends the gatherings and shares information, including missing person flyers of Brings Plenty. In a telephone interview Wednesday with Kansas City Indian Center Executive Director Gaylene Krauser, she said the Native community is coming together because when a Native person goes missing, they often do not get much public attention or media attention to help find them. Krauser says she's been in brief contact with his family, which has expressed it's out of character for Brings Plenty to be out of touch with his family and friends. As for the accusations against Brings Plenty, his family has posted on social media that the most important thing right now is to locate him and that there's a time and place to address the allegations. Krauser agrees with the family's sentiments and says the Indian Center will continue to offer its support in the search. As of Wednesday afternoon, the Lawrence, Kansas Police Department had no new information or updates on the search for Brings Plenty. According to the police department regarding the incident, officers responded to reports of a female screaming for help, but the suspect fled before officers arrived. Police say the investigation has identified Brings Plenty as the suspect and that traffic cameras showed his vehicle leaving the city traveling southbound on 59 Highway. Brings Plenty was last known to be driving a 2005 white Ford Explorer. Anyone with information is asked to call police. Meanwhile, students at Haskell have built a fire and will keep it burning until Brings Plenty is found. Students are also meeting Thursday to plan a search party. Researchers are working to understand all factors underlying maternal health care for Native Americans in western South Dakota. Most counties west of the Missouri River are considered a maternal health care desert. As South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Lee Strubinger reports, that means women live more than 100 miles away from medical providers that specialize in delivery.
Distance, weather, transportation, and trauma are just a few of the barriers standing in the way of pregnant Native American women needing or wanting prenatal health care. That's coupled with a lack of providers West River, both in reservations and in the Black Hills. Dr. Amy Elliott is a chief research officer at Avera McKinnon. She describes the issue bluntly.
It's crisis levels with the lack of obstetrics providers, especially on the western side of the state. And how do we find solutions, not just for recruiting more people, but also do we have to think a little bit different about how we deliver care?
According to the South Dakota Department of Health, from 2012 to 2021, American Indians made up 20% of all live births, but 44% of all pregnancy-associated deaths. Elliot and others want to fully understand what's causing that issue and others. Elliot says a lack of data hinders insight into understanding causes or generating solutions.
An advantage of being within a health system is we have access to quite a bit of data, and we also have close partnerships with the Department of Health, with Great Plains Tribal Leaders Board, and other community agencies around. And so we're able to help maybe combine some different data streams that haven't been combined before.
That, Elliot hopes, will lead to lasting and systemic change in better health outcomes for Native women on the Great Plains. For National Native News, I'm Lee Strubinger in Rapid City.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by Sanofsky Chambers Law, championing tribal sovereignty and Native American rights since 1976, from opioids litigation to treaty rights to tribal self-governance, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska. Sanofsky Chambers Law.
Does your club, institution, or other group need custom-branded apparel? A wide variety of t-shirts, hoodies, and much more, all custom-printed or embroidered, are available from NativeScreenPrinting.com, a division of SkyScreen Printing, who support this program.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Tensions were at a boiling point between the Ute tribes and white settlers in Utah in 1923. A Paiute leader, William Posey, tried to keep the peace, but he became disenchanted after unrelenting tactics that deprived the tribes of their ability to access the land and food as they always had. A series of thefts and subsequent escape by two Ute teens gave the settlers an excuse to crack down on surrounding tribes, and they specifically targeted Posey. They rounded up and imprisoned dozens of Native residents in a makeshift stockade. The event was sensationalized in the national press that characterized it as an uprising by the tribes, and the outcome forever changed the tribe's way of life. Today, the 100 Years of Silence Project, in cooperation with the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, is telling their side of the story. We'll hear more about the project and the history behind it, and of course, you as listeners can join us. If you have connections to this history, give us a call, share your story, tell us what you know. 1-800-996-2848 is our number to the Albuquerque studio. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's meet today's guests. Joining us from White Mesa, Utah, on the Ute Mountain Ute Reservation is Sean Ketchum. He's the project director for the 100 Years of Silence Project, and he is Navajo, Ute Mountain Ute, and Allen Canyon Ute. Sean, welcome to our show today, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Hello, my name is Sean Ketchum. Good afternoon, everybody. I am Sean Ketchum Yesha. I'm Tahle, No Dodene, Totachitni, and Holagahni. Those are my clans in Navajo. I originate from Allen Canyon, further down between Allen Canyon and Navajo Mountain region. In that area, that's where my roots are from. My other part of my roots are from Ute Mountain Ute Tribe.
Appreciate it, Sean. Thank you. Thank you very much for that introduction. Also joining us on the show today from Providence, Rhode Island, is Angelo Baca. He's the communications lead for the 100 Years of Silence Project. He is Navajo and Hopi. Angelo, welcome to you as well, and please feel free to further introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you, Sean, for that introduction. In our traditional way, Angelo Baca Yinishya, Plashtia Inishlin, Keith Ani Bashishin, Twitchini Dashiche, Nakai Dene, Dashanella. I'm from San Juan County, been living in and around the White Mesa Reservation and the Ute community all my life. And so we're neighbors, we're relatives, we're collaborators and partners, and so this is perfect time for us to kind of reclaim that heritage and that history. So thank you for this opportunity for us to talk with you today.
Appreciate you joining us today, Angelo. Our third guest joins us from White Mountain, Utah, Gwen Cantsey. She's the administrator for the Ute Mountain Tribe, and of course, she is Ute. Gwen, hello, and welcome to our show.
Hi, good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you, Gwen. Appreciate it. White Mesa, Utah. I keep stumbling on that today. My apologies. Thank you for joining us, Gwen. And Sean, let's go ahead and begin the conversation with you. Tell us, how are you connected to William Posey, and what was his role with the Ute and Paiute tribes 100 years ago?
W. Posey, he was one of my many great grandfathers on my Paiute Allen Canyon side. He came from Navajo Mountain, or Lone Peak Mountain, what they referred to back in the day. And his role for this was, he stood up, he was very spiritual, he stood up for what was right. He didn't sit down or listen to the injustices of the wrongful acts that were taking place in 1923. As he aged, he always stood up for what was right. He understood the views of the blending perspectives that they had relating to the indigenous people of Allen Canyon, Ute Mountain mix. So he stood up for what was right, and he didn't let them try to talk their way to have them negotiate on bad terms.
Okay. So this is interesting here. This is history that I was completely unaware of until we decided to do this show. And I'm really excited just to learn more about not only William Posey, but also these events that unfolded. And it's my understanding, Sean, that even though this specific issue that we're going to address today was about 100 years ago in 1923, the initial catalyst occurred much earlier, as far back as the late 1800s. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And what were some of those events, some of those tensions, some of those severed relationships or issues that led to this ultimate confrontation there, bloodshed?
So the contact of 1847, the people, the Nichu people, they grew regional power from 17th and 19th century, from Colorado, Utah, parts of New Mexico, and northern Mexico. They traded with the Spanish Empire, later on Mexican state, to exert power over the Colorado Plains and central Utah. And then in 1847, there was an incursion of Ute homelands. Mormon settlers arrived to Utah, firmly intent on building a Great Basin Kingdom. Initial indigenous people were cordial, tension, rapid build. Mormons actively expanded to Utes and other territories. And then in 1849, the first Ute Treaty with the USA, U.S. victory in Mexican War of 1846 to 1848, 28 Ute leaders signed the treaty of the Abaque-Perdoverty, placing Utes under U.S. jurisdiction, allowing U.S. citizens passage through Ute country, agreeing for provisions, trading posts, military installations. The Utes received gifts and farm equipment. The 1949 treaty may see the beginning of Ute legal relations with the U.S., beginning the indemnities perpetrated upon Utes by U.S., other treaties, lands, cessions, and agreements. By 1850, the U.S. declared Utah as U.S. territory. Utah territorial governor becomes ex officio Indian agent. Hostilities began between Ute bands and Mormon settlers in Utah, where the Mormons went to expand forcibly beyond Salt Lake to conquest, which later went to the Black Hawk War conclusion. Mm-hmm. And to the present day of 2024, March 23rd, 101 years of the anniversary, and where we host it and have the 100 Years of Silence Project art display up there at the Leonardo in Salt Lake City.
Okay, Sean. So there's... I'm just going to interrupt you briefly. I'm sorry, but this is interesting. So this event here 100 years ago, a lot of actions, a lot of hostilities that built up to it. And, of course, 100 years ago, it really boiled over with what we're going to focus on today, and specifically with regard to William Posey and his role at the time. So tell us a little bit more, if you could click ahead now to this era, the early 1920s. How was William Posey regarded by the settlers in the area at that time, and how was he also portrayed by the press?
Posey, the press they didn't really talk to Posey. They mainly talked to the settlers and took the settlers' view as to what they thought of the indigenous people of the IU area and to what I've known about how it is today. They still kind of hold that, you still kind of have that feeling that they held 100 years ago towards us, but at a lesser degree compared to back then in the day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the 100 Years of Silence Project, tell us more. How did it come about?
It's a critical part for our outreach to the broader community. We hold interviews with community members. We participate, becoming a part of the historical record. We help future generations better understand the events of 1923, as well as their significance of the century later. The project began in 2022 with a grant from the Mellon Foundation Monument Fund. Community members were held in the Ute Mountain Ute community of White Mesa throughout 2023. We heard from elders about their perspectives in 1923. Seven new artists made original artwork related to the event, which is on display at the Leonardo Museum mentioned earlier. The purpose of this project is healing through art, through storytelling, through music, and through the community. We want to hear the community story. History states that they've only reached out, that the press and the folks, the historians only reached out to hear the stories that the people of Blanding and nearby areas wanted to hear, to tell. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing, we're trying to hear the stories of the elders, to hear the stories from the community members, because when we approached them, they were like, we can't talk about these things. These things aren't good to talk about. But later on, as we progressed, we were able to talk about them, and they came around, and now we are here promoting healing, sharing stories of Ute perspective on the incident, and showcase their legacy of endurance.
Thanks, Sean. We're going to have to take a short break here, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about this event 100 years ago. A number of tribes are joining a growing initiative to protect the night skies from artificial light. Advocates say setting aside places with a natural view of the stars is in keeping with some tribal traditions and may also help wildlife. We'll talk about how tribes are participating in the dark skies movement on the next Native America Calling.
I'm Michael, and I used to smoke. I never used to think about breathing. Then my left lung collapsed, and I was diagnosed with COPD. Now I think about breathing all the time. I'm on an oxygen machine so I can breathe. I take medicine so I can breathe. My tip is, enjoy the breaths you don't have to think about. You don't know how long you'll have them.
Smoking can cause COPD. You can quit. For free help, visit cdc.gov/quitnow. A message from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. We're focusing on what is sometimes called the Posey War. It took place 101 years ago in southeast Utah and involved white settlers and Ute and Paiute tribes. Is this a piece of history that you're already aware of? Only 100 years ago, a lot of us didn't realize that there were still issues like this occurring, confrontations, violent confrontations between tribes and white settlers as recently as the last century. So if you've got something similar to talk about, maybe you're familiar with this issue or your own tribe has some kind of similar history, let us know. 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go now to Angelo Baca, our next guest. He's also with the 100 Years of Silence Project. And Angelo, what more can you tell us about the Posey War and some of this very, very interesting history we're learning about today?
Yeah, thanks, Sean. I think it's important for folks to understand that, you know, the stories and the testimonies that are coming out now are also very closed off and personal and painful. So a lot of it hasn't really been shared even within the community. So these meetings, the community meetings that Sean just talked about, they were really important healing processes for people to learn more information, to relearn the history, to educate themselves, educate each other, educate everyone else, and decide whether or not they wanted to be out with this, because it was important to start that conversation for healing, but it was even more important for trying to teach that for the future generations. So our emphasis on the 100 years of silence being broken is essentially a community-wide initiative where we had participation, consent, buy-in, local and tribal nation leadership was involved, traditional leadership was involved, a lot of the Bear Dance chiefs have endorsed it. So it's all around a really incredible sharing of history, of culture, and resilience that we have not had an opportunity to do so safely.
And what's the feedback so far? I mean, like I just shared earlier, I was unfamiliar with this history, and I'm thinking a lot of other folks are. So here it is. Finally, these stories are being told. This history is being shared. What are people saying?
So it varies. I think the Ute community themselves are very excited now to actually be having this conversation and having it being shared openly and publicly and together. I think it's been something of a really interesting kind of revelation for everybody, because as we revisit these ideas and these histories, we're seeing that it's not in the history book, it's not being taught in school, it's certainly not being taught in Sunday school. So there are all these like opportunities now where we're understanding that this is important for us to document as history, but not to be stuck in the past. Yes, this happened 100 years ago, but also we have a living, vibrant community today, and we're also thinking about the next 100 years and the resilience of future generations to come.
And Angelo, what can you tell us about the impacts, the social impacts, maybe the political impacts now, of Posey's War 100 years later? Has it made a lasting impression on the Ute people and others in that area?
Absolutely. I think what Sean was referring to earlier is really true. There's still kind of this perception that the Utes are outlaws, that they are somehow losers of this war, which is completely and totally untrue. There's so many things that happened 100 years ago that we're still dealing with today. You know, they don't understand their culture, their history, their language, the way that they live their traditional lives. And all of that contributed to the incident 100 years ago as well. If you can imagine, what kind of different ways were they thinking about justice? What kind of ways were they thinking about economics, about sharing a place, or any kind of ideas of indigenous reciprocity and respect? Those elements are still missing in the community. We're still awaiting that kind of recognition and acknowledgement from the state, the county, and the town. Although they're doing it with very, very minimal effort, we want more because we think it's really important, and they owe the original people of these lands that respect.
Well, let's talk about that, Angelo. I mean, this acknowledgement that you seek from the descendants of those who perpetrated these actions against the tribe, specifically we're talking about the city of Blanding, Utah, as well as San Juan County. What would make you folks, what would give you that closure? What would give you that redemption? What should that acknowledgement look like?
Well, as far as, our team has been discussing, it would be important for that recognition and acknowledgement in some official form or fashion, that, an apology could be forthcoming, but not just an apology, but something with actual action to support it. So some kind of support for the Native community there, which has been long overdue. San Juan County has had its issues in the past. They've, you know, dealt with exclusion, discrimination, racism, gerrymandering when it comes to the Native population, even though most of the voters there in San Juan County are Native American. And so we've been excluded in all these facets, from business, economics, education, politics, and history. And so 100 years was not that long ago. You know, I still remember when my grandmother told me about her grandmother who came back from the long walk. And that was, you know, we lost her several years ago, but I can still see how close that event was. It wasn't that long ago. So 100 years, the wounds are still fresh.
Yeah, they really are. And that's what's so intriguing here. Like you said, 100 years ago is not, a lot of us know people that were alive during that time. And Angelo, also another interesting component here, tragic component, is that many Ute people were rounded up and imprisoned as a result of this conflict. Also, a number of young people were sent off to boarding school. Tell us about those impacts as well.
Yeah, so this incident was one of many in a constellation of historical tragic events in the United States in the 20s. We can think of, you know, Killers of the Flower Moon and the Osage Reign of Terror that happened in the 20s, Black Wall Street in Oklahoma and the burning down of, you know, a really vibrant district that happened in the 20s. And so did the so-called Posey War. So what did all those have in common? Well, they have the focus on land and money. And they're specifically targeting communities of color who have both of those. So what we're seeing here is a legacy that's still being carried on into the next generation of that same attitude and the same neglect. And there's no, there's been no real active, you know, repairing or healing of those traumatic events until now. The Osage are telling their story. The folks from Oklahoma are telling their story, and we are also are telling our story. So I think it's been an important acknowledgement that these are painful events, but the story is not over.
Well, tell us more about some of these events that have been undertaken there by the 100 Years of Silence Project and just other initiatives, other ways that you folks are using to present this information to the public.
Yeah, so we're really taking the initiative to be proactive in, you know, having the community support us and doing it with inviting the entire community out for that 100 Years of Silence event that we had on March 23rd, 2024 at the Leonardo Museum in Salt Lake City. And it was fantastic. Most of the community came out. There were you elders, storytellers, artists, musicians, leaders, and, you know, most of the, I think actually all of the Utah tribal leaders who have heard of the project are in support because they also have stories that are similar to this that haven't been told yet. And so they have acknowledged that we're sort of leading this charge and they have supported us and really expressed gratitude for doing that. So we're trying to outreach with making, you know, media available, videos, photos, website, social media stuff, just doing an outreach to really emphasize all of the stories and histories that are not included in the books or are, have been excluded.
All right, Angelo, thank you so much again for just sharing this information and adding to the history that Sean shared earlier. And let's bring our third guest in now, Gwen Cantsey. And Gwen, I want to welcome you again to the show. You are, of course, the administrator for the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe. And your last name, Cantsey, that's a name that comes up often in the history we're talking about today. What are your family connections to these events?
Well, excuse me. My father was Myers Cantsey, who worked along with Mr. Stanley Bronson to, you know, do interviews, go out to the community, show him some historic places that were, you know, connected to the events of 1923. My grandfather, Ants and Scotty Cantsy was actually, in our way, he was a brother to William Posey. And he was right along with him in everything that happened. You know, unfortunately, it was not a good, it wasn't a good thing that happened to them with their, you know, imprisonment in the stockade and in the basement of that building. But, you know, he was there. And my father used to tell us a lot of stories about what he heard from his father. So it was interesting to learn, and it was sad at the same time.
And these stories that your father would share from his own father, can you share any of those stories with us today, Gwen?
Yeah, well, actually, like Angelo and Sean had mentioned in their talk, they were stories of sadness and stories of, I want to say rebellion, but I don't know if that would be the correct word, because, you know, these were our traditional homelands. These were where we raised our families, our livestock, our crops. This was our way of life. And when the settlers came in and disrupted that harmony, it caused a lot of turmoil. And, you know, when you throw a wrench in things like that, that's something that's positive and turn it into a negative, there's always going to be some kind of resistance. And there was resistance then, which started this thing, this event that happened in 1923. And I think that, you know, in my opinion, they had every right to do what they did, our ancestors, because, you know, they fought for what was right. They wanted their lives to be unchanged. They wanted the harmony with the land and with nature. And when the settlers came in, disrupted all of that, then it just, they stood up for themselves. And, you know, the Ute people, as long, you know, as well as all Indigenous people, are very strong, very resilient. And, you know, we stand up for what we feel is right. And I think that was the cause of this, was the, you know, they didn't appreciate what they came in. They came in to take their land, to own their land, where land was never owned. It was always shared. And, you know, all the different tribal nations that wandered this area, you know, yeah, you had your little territory, but it was common sense that they shared it. With when the tribal, all the Native American tribes, Indigenous tribes, however you want to put it, across this country started having the same things happen to them, you know, when this country was quote unquote born. You know, it was something that they resisted. Unfortunately, there was very, very sad circumstances to that. We lost a lot of our ancestors needlessly because of greed, because of, you know, ownership and dominance, which should have never happened.
Gwen, sometimes in some of the documents I reviewed for the show, William Posey is presented as a peacemaker, as somebody who was trying to, you know, get the settlers and the Ute people to come to some sort of a compromise, come to some sort of an understanding, and prevent as much violence as possible and move forward. Is that true in your regard?
In a sense, it is, because, you know, you always want to minimize conflict. You don't go out there to start conflict. So, you know, of course, that's what my father used to tell me, that, you know, they wanted to meet with the settlers. They wanted to, you know, communicate with them and say, okay, this is where we live. This is our land. But they pushed that aside. And, you know, eventually what happened happened. And it wasn't a good thing, because, you know, if you're going to be get pushed out of the way, you're going to stand up for yourself. And from my understanding, he tried what he could to work with the people, to get along with the settlers that were coming onto these lands. And they wouldn't meet him halfway, I guess you would say. So it ended up the way that it did, unfortunately.
Yeah, definitely just spiraled on to a next level there. We're going to take another break here, and we'd like to get some calls going from our listeners. Anybody who is from this part of the country, the Southwest, perhaps the Four Corners, Ute Mountain country up there in southeastern, southwestern Colorado, as well as parts of Utah, give us a call. Let us know your thoughts, your perspectives. 1-800-996-2848, or maybe you come from another tribe and you have some similar type of history that has never been shared before, a similar type of event that for whatever reason the history books have just not covered it. It's been omitted, but it's something that you'd like to talk about. We'd love to hear that perspective as well. 1-800-99-NATIVE.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You have attuned to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Sean Spruce, and we're talking about the Posey War today. It was a skirmish between Utah tribes and settlers that had become rare after the turn of the century. The Ute Mountain Utes are part of a new project to ensure the Native perspective is part of that historical narrative, and you can join this conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. And we've got Gwen Cantsey on the line right now. She's one of our guests from the Ute Mountain tribe in parts of Colorado and Utah. And Gwen, what's your thought on the 100 Years of Silence project, and how important is it to foster healing amongst your people?
Well, you know, like had been mentioned before, it's nothing that is in history books. It's been left out. And that is a really integral part of this area of our people of the county here. And unfortunately, that's something that I never read in history books, something that has been a whisper in the past. And we are bringing that to light. And I have noticed personally that there's a lot of young people and a lot of community members that are coming forward, and I can see the pride in them. You know, knowing that their story is being told and that it is being acknowledged. And, you know, in years past, they used to be, there's a area of land that we had, our people in the past had inhabited, and it was called Allen Canyon. In our language, in our Ute language, they used to call it Anikan. So when my father was growing up, and when he would tell us that, and he'd meet someone and they would say, "Oh, you're Ute Mountain tribe," my dad would always say, "No, I'm Anikan Ute." That means I'm Allen Canyon Ute. So, you know, that's a place that we hold close to our hearts. And a lot of the Ute people in the past used to farm there. They used to have houses there. And you know, I think that's a part of healing, especially for our young people, since this has been, you know, like the project says, 100 years of silence. There's been silence surrounding this event. And now we have the courage and the right people to bring this to the surface. And I think that's a big part of the healing within our community, within ourselves, within our people. You know, things are not all roses on any reservation, I would say. And, you know, we've had the arms that have come to us and that were brought to our people, which led to a lot of conflicts and, you know, within the people of the tribe. So this is a good starting point to start that healing for our people, because we need to set the ground rules here and say it is not a bad thing to talk about your past. This is who you are, and this is who you will remain. We are very resilient people, and we're not planning on going anywhere anytime soon. So, you know, we that healing has to be passed along to our young people so that they can bring their pride forth, so that they can be proud of who they are, where they come from, you know. And it's something that's really important. Like Angelo mentioned, we have artists that were doing artwork. And in that artwork, they expressed how they felt in the artwork. And it was amazing, beautiful pieces that were done from their heart and how they were feeling while they were doing it. And when we had the Leonardo event in Salt Lake City, the artists were up there and, you know, they explained to the audience what that meant to them personally, their personal connection to this. And it was really heartwarming to see that pride there. And, you know, that the healing has just begun. It's going to go on for eons into the future. But, you know, this is a great stepping stone to bring our people back from where they once were. And the strength is there.
It really sounds like it, Gwen. Definitely a great start in what we're learning about today here with the 100 Years of Silence Project. I want to take a caller now. On the line, we have Serena Posey, and she is an event elder and a strategy consultant for the 100 Years of Silence Project. She is a member of the U Mountain Tribe. And Serena, hello, are you there?
Hello. Yes,
hello. Serena, it's wonderful that you're able to call in and join us today. Tell us about your role with the current project, and what do you hope results from it?
So I am part of the team, the 100 Year Silence team. So my role is part of the planning committee. I assist in planning the community meetings that we hold bi-monthly, set up the meetings and attend the meetings as well, and also assist the historian in setting up and arranging interviews with the elders here in White Mesa.
And Serena, what are some of the stories that the elders are sharing with you? What are they telling you?
So one elder, which is one of the two oldest elders here, had sat, you know, here in my office, and he did, you know, mentioned a little bit of, a little bit of story about Posey, you know, William Posey. And he did mention that, you know, William, you know, what he was told from one of the residents of Blanding had in him that William was, you know, he was the expert with, you know, guns. And so, you know, he just gave a little brief, story about it, not too much, but, you know. And then the other elder, which is my mother-in-law, she's one of the older elders as well, the two. So, you know, a lot of the stuff she, you know, does talk about, but some of it I'm just kind of, you know, don't want to, you know, bring, you know, bad memories, but,
sure,
you know, it is, you know, it is part of, you know, the healing where, you know, you have to bring out, you know, the story in order to talk about it. And that's part of healing, mm-hmm. you know, with any individual. So, but yeah, she's, she told me some stories about her living in Allen Canyon and then, you know, moving from, you know, back and forth and what she experienced in Allen Canyon and, you know, her, you know, being one of the children to be, you know, placed in the boarding school. So, you know, it's really, you know, heartbreaking and it's really an honor to, you know, listen to, you know, the elders that we still have today with us in our community to be able to, you know, listen to their stories.
Right, right, Serena, because I think, you know, the clock's definitely ticking and the fact that you still have folks that have connections to this history, that's just wonderful. And it's great to see that you're taking advantage of that and you're getting a chance to interview these people and just hear their stories. Angela, I want to go back to you because, again, what I think is just continues to really just intrigue me about this story today is the fact that this is history. Again, it's not that long ago. And again, we keep hearing from you and the other guests that this is history that hasn't been shared. It was not revealed. In some ways, it was suppressed. And I'm just curious, Angela, have you talked to any other people from other tribes or other communities that are saying, you know what, we've got a similar story. We've got a similar issue that happened with our people 100 years ago or 80 years ago, and you're inspiring us to want to share that history as well. Are you hearing those kinds of words, Angelo?
Yes, I think we're hearing that, especially with other young tribal leaders, because what's unique about our project director is that, you know, he's a young man, and he's, you know, completely endorsed and supported by his community to take this great responsibility and burden forward. And it's inspiring because he's role modeling that for youth, but he's also encouraging elders and leadership to participate as well. And that's across tribes through the entirety of the Utah state. All the other tribes are backing him and supporting him. And it's just another extension of the already started intertribal coalition building that has happened with both these stories of little known histories and the protection of land, such as Bears Ears. And Bears Ears is a traditional area of the Ute folks as well, because Allen Canyon is within Bears Ears. So this incident in 1923 was another way to leverage that landscape away from the Ute people. It was essentially a settler incursion on Native lands that was used as an excuse to steal land and children, because after that event, it became much easier to take the children away from Ute families and stick them into boarding schools. So there's lasting intergenerational trauma and effects from these events.
Angelo, going back to this history, and again, you just shared its impact on Bears Ears, which is land that's been heavily covered in the news in recent years. What other historical facts do we need to make clear to our listeners about not just Posey's War, not just William Posey, but some of these other long-term ramifications that resulted from this period of your tribal history?
Well, I think, you know, it's important for people to understand that it seems like the history of the Ute people sort of stopped after this event in 1923, but nothing could be further from the truth, because it was actually a very modern pursuit. Something that also isn't really told is the fact that, you know, there was consideration of doing this manhunt for Posey and other Utes in a biplane. And even like considering the fact that they could use that as a weapon against the youth. There were also Model T Fords that were pursuing them, as well as the posses on horseback. So this illegal mob was essentially trying to hunt down Utes any way possible, and just understanding that, you know, this prison camp that was done in the middle of town held women and children in it who had nothing to do with any of this. So it really makes you question, you know, the moral, legal, and ethical ramifications of settler families, you know, the Mormon church, the kind of ideas about what attitudes people are having in Utah for wanting to secure and control natural resources like land and water and minerals, and, you know, seeing behind what is being shown to you, both in the public and in books, and actually going to the real people of the land and asking them, what is the real story? You're the ones who have been here the longest for generations since time immemorial, and you know this place better than anyone. Obviously, they have wisdom stories and knowledge to share that we should all know about.
All right. Thank you, Angelo. And Sean, I want to go back to you. The 100 Years of Silence Project, where can our listeners go to learn more about the work you folks are doing?
They can go to www.100yearsofsilence.com. They can also go to Facebook and watch the live stream that we hosted up at the Leonardo. It's on Utah Dene Pekea, and that will, one public launch event will be on there. We also have an Instagram, 100 Years of Silence Instagram. And when people do share the photos or share any information with everybody else on social media, can they hashtag 100 Years of Silence, hashtag No More Silence, and to spread the word, to let people know, to reach out to other people they know, to share with their tribe, tribal leaders, tribal elders, and to reach out and to make this awareness start to happen across the indigenous land, across the landscape everywhere, and to go as far as we can to bring the awareness of healing, to bring the awareness to be able to have support from all states around Utah.
Well, Sean, appreciate it very much, sharing that information for our listeners. And at this point, we are just about out of time, so we're going to have to begin to wind down our conversation. Encourage our listeners to check out our website as well, NativeAmericaCalling.com. We have a link to the 100 Years of Silence Project there. Also, engage with us. This conversation can continue on social media. We have Facebook, we have Instagram, so please connect with us and share your comments and thoughts with regard to today's show. It's been a really, really thoughtful conversation, an insightful conversation into some history that's not all that well known there in and around the state of Utah in 1923. So we really enjoy shows like this. We're able to bring interesting eras of history, interesting stories to our listeners that aren't always publicized in other areas. So appreciate you, listeners, for joining our show today. And, of course, our guests who joined us on the show, Sean Ketchum, Angelo Baca, Gwen Cantsey as well. Wonderful conversation. Appreciate you all for joining us here on Native America Calling, your Native America Calling show. And please join us again tomorrow. We'll be taking a look at the dark night skies. Tribes are part of an effort to stop the encroachment of light pollution to preserve people's view of the stars and planets. Until then, have a great rest of your day. I'm Sean Spruce.
Support from Dartmouth College, hosting its first Tribal Leadership Academy August 4th to the 10th in New Hampshire. Up to 25 new or appointed tribal government leaders and a group of experienced presenters will consider intergovernmental relations, economic development, healthcare, natural resources, and tribal law and order. Dartmouth College will cover the travel and attendance costs. Application available at DartmouthTribalLeadershipAcademy.com. Application deadline is May 1st, 2024.
Hamitakipiki, April Kiwayatske Wuabalize Wiapi Hetra, O Kolaki Chewa Okie, Mushi Opchayo, Medicaid la hake oncha pictilo. Isama sole at shihanta la koa woke obogalakayo. Nish lil yayo, healthcare.gov. Nish lil mas apkayo, 1-800-318-2596. Le wot khaneki, Medicare to Medicaid o tieta hiapelo. Ho, hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.